feel like they're in control of their own bodies and their own decision-making around their bodies. Always. Thank you.
Will I do a rebuttal?
Please do.
I would just like to point out that the negative healthcare outcomes that my opponent mentioned are connected to the lack of healthcare system. The fact that we don't have a healthcare system, that fact that people can't access healthcare, mm-hmm. and the fact that the insurance companies are keeping people away and denying healthcare to Americans and to Alaskans, the fact that women in this country can't get access to a doctor, the fact that pregnancy in this country often results in bankruptcy for women. All these things are a reason why we need to move towards a public healthcare system, universal healthcare system, single payer Medicare for all. And it will be something very truly liberating for women across this nation to have uninfringed access to healthcare.
Thank you. Jack, a rebuttal?
Yeah, I'm just going to add that we, again, these are times when we're all very anxious about this issue. Yesterday made us even more anxious, each and every one of us. All the more reason to ensure that you have leadership in Washington, in Congress, the one body that stands tall to the others, ensuring that our rights are protected. This is important. You need to win this because this is, stakes are high. I was in Kotzebue hearing from a young woman, and we were, you know, visiting. I'm friends, very close friends with several families there, and hearing about them having to drive a snow machine, 70 miles in to get birth control was pretty earth-shaking for me to hear. This is a reality, and we have a lot of work to do now.
Okay, we have time for about one more question before we take a brief intermission. Start with you, Elise. Mm-hmm. Polls indicate an overwhelming majority of the country is in favor of improved gun regulation. What specific gun regulation changes will you propose and support?
Thank you. And this question, especially about a month ago, was about the only question I heard throughout Alaska as I was traveling. And absolutely, I will stand tall for smart regulations that make sense. At the same time, we are a gun state. I'm sure that 80% of us in this room probably have a gun. Protecting our Second Amendment rights is very important. At the same time, let's be very clear about this. For us to sit on our hands and not pass reasonable legislation like background checks, like ensuring that we can study through what is recommended from the CDC right now today to know what levers would really stop the deaths in Alaska by firearms, we're dying more than twice the lower 48, and we have been for years. We are dying more than twice, 23 per 100,000, 11 in the lower 48, 23 here in Alaska. Much of it is from self-inflicted. I appreciate that. But we don't even have the data to know how to make the right, you know, how to make the right decisions to ensure that the legislation is going to be protecting Alaskans. That's unconscionable. No, I won't take a dime from NRA. Our current legislator right now has had many years to work on this. There's been legislation on background checks and they've done nothing. That's unconscionable. Yes, I absolutely will do those two things at the very beginning, day one, when I'm in office. Absolutely.
Thank you. Dimitri?
Yeah. I'm a gun owner. I have a gun. And I don't really feel that my gun rights are threatened. Although I'm a father of six children, and when I send my kids to school, I feel like their safety is threatened. My five-year-old daughters practice how to, you know, avoid an active shooter at school. It's outrageous. This is our reality, that our children, instead of learning math and reading and so forth, they're practicing how to take on active shooters. This should not be the new normal in our country. We should not accept this as a status quo. And I can support improved background checks, but what I fully feel we need to start with is funding the CDC to do a comprehensive study and to make recommendations to our lawmakers that can be a catalyst for action. So our lawmakers, because they, I mean, honestly, a lot lawmakers have been cowards on this issue. As teachers are being slaughtered. And so I think perhaps it will help these cowards get a little bit of courage to, if they could have a study to push against and say, you know, CDC says this and we will act upon these recommendations, because this is the status quo and these shootings keep happening and happening and nothing gets done. So at the very least, we need to fund CDC to make sure we get a comprehensive study on gun violence and we get some recommendations from our government, which again, in 40 years of Dong Young, and over 40 years of Dong Young, we don't have a single study from a federal agency indicating the course of action and making recommendations how to solve these issues.
During your rebuttal, could you also talk about how any proposed regulations that you've been thinking about would be implemented at the school level as well? Would be implemented at the school level.
So,
this is listener supported public radio, KBBI Homer, AM 890. We apologize for some technical difficulties we are having with the broadcast. If you're just joining us, we have been listening to the Democratic Party primary candidates debate for the U.S. House of Representatives. Two candidates, Elise Galvin and Dimitri Shane, are participating, and Borough Assemblymember Kelly Cooper is moderating.
Wait, I kept mine with me. We're good.
Okay, we'll start with you this time, Dimitri. Could you vote for a measure increasing the minimum wage nationally to $15 an hour or higher? Why or why not?
No. Okay. So in our country, we have been engaged in this race to the bottom. And I don't think it's good. I don't think it works well when our unions are under attack and up with inflation. And when I came out of high school, I was able to get a union job and I worked as a plant operator and I was able to pay. I was getting a living wage of $15 an hour and I was able to pay my way through college and I was able to pay for my wife, Melissa, to go through college. And making a decent wage is important for folks to be able to provide for themselves and their family and kind of progress through our society. So I definitely support raising the minimum wage. $15 sounds like a good number, although again, we have to factor in healthcare. If you're making $15 per hour and you're paying $2,000 to $3,000 for health insurance policy, that $15 an hour wage does not help you. So I really feel like we do need to solve the healthcare piece to make sure that there is no wage stagnation and to make sure that folks can actually have a living wage in this country.
Elise?
I'm very open to that. I think we need to recognize, though, that $15 in Alabama versus $15 in Bethel are two different things entirely. And we do need to consider healthcare costs. We need to consider fuel costs. We need to consider a lot of things, the cost of food. And so it's very important, I think, when we're in Congress to really look at the full picture. I'm very open, though, because I'm sorry, but I've been serving tables as a mom of four when we couldn't make ends meet. I was waitressing, I think it was 15, maybe 20 years ago, because that's what I needed to do, even though my husband was working as a new attorney, because we had a lot of loans to pay off, and we had to make sure we could afford our housing, healthcare, and food up here in Alaska. So I think that it's important to look at the whole picture, and I really, American is able to work 40 hours, come home, and spend time with their family. That's the whole meaning of life for me.
Would you like a rebuttal, Dimitri?
Yeah, I guess I would just like to point out that my wife, Melissa, is Alaska Native, and my kids are Alaska Native, and that's really wonderful to have no-cost health care. You simply take your children to the doctor, and it works here in the state of Alaska. And if you're fortunate fortunate enough to have this kind of a healthcare system, then $15 is going to work really great for you. And even so, again, healthcare is really vital to our society. It's vital to our country. And no-cost healthcare exists in the state of Alaska. Over 100,000 Alaska Native people get to benefit from that system. It's almost entirely federally funded, and it's an amazing thing. And we need to, it's about time we got it done for all American people. It's time.
Thank you. Elise?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, and I think at the very beginning I mentioned the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium is such a great example of a model that we could bring to Washington. It does use funding streams from the VA, funding streams from Medicaid and Medicare, and the Indian Health. And that is because that's the way they've put that together. They're actually serving 25% of our veterans here in Alaska. And there's some work for us to look at that and figure out how we might best serve all of America, because that is dragging us down. And like I've said early on, that's the committee I can't wait to serve on, because I think we have a lot of good work to happen very soon.
Thank you. Over time, this is for you first, Elise. Over time, Congress has effectively relinquished its power to declare war to the executive branch. Should the legislative branch reassert constitutional discretion, and require a vote before engaging in further conflict?
I think that there have been in the history of the United States times where there have been emergency situations. But I absolutely support Congress having the say. That is the way it's written. That's the way it's supposed to be. There's also some special circumstances. I appreciate that. But unfortunately, lately, it has not felt like a democracy. And there needs to be grown-ups in the room that are holding our administrator accountable for sound decisions, particularly in light of what we're seeing right now, where we have foreign policy that is happening over Twitter. It's unacceptable. It's unconscionable. And I'm not sure.
Americans go and die. It's not something we should take lightly, that we're sending our sons and daughters and fathers and mothers to go die overseas. And Congress should accept this responsibility. And anytime Americans are dying, American troops are dying, we need to declare war. And this will prevent these future abuses. Thanks.
Dimitri, just for clarification, do you support Congress doing the declaration 100% of the time, or do you think there should be any exceptions?
I would say if it's longer than 10 days and you're going to move in permanent troops and build bases, you need to declare war. A police action or whatever they're calling it does not include nation building like we see in Iraq and Afghanistan. And Congress needs to accept its responsibility and declare war when we have these prolonged conflicts. And it needs to be, we need to be honest with American troops. And I think once we're honest about the process, we can provide additional resources to the veterans that come back from these declared wars.
Jack, a follow up, Elise?
No, that's okay.
Moving on. Current immigration policy, this is for you, Dimitri. Current immigration policy is an unmitigated tragedy. Families are being torn apart. What would good immigration policy look like to you?
So as an immigrant myself, I will tell you that our immigration system is broken. It's not what it's supposed to be. What's happening on the southern border is un-American. That is the lowest point. It's absolutely shameful. We as Americans cannot accept this. We should never accept the fact that we're separating children from their mothers and caging children. And I put the blame squarely on Donald Trump and Donald Young, all these people who have been in office for 40 years. They have led us to this point. This is where America is at. It is their responsibility. It is their shame to bear. And a good immigration policy would look like if we have a decent work permit system to where immigrants can come to this country and work, provide for their families, travel back and forth to their country of origin. We can have control of our borders, and we can also have a path to citizenship for immigrants and migrants who are already here and who are part of America and part of our American fabric and part of our society. That's
Elise.
So I wanted to first of all say that what happened over the last few months that we're just seeing is not new. It's just that we've now, it's popped for us. But there have been things that have happened that are really atrocities over the years. And it's not just with this president, frankly. It's been with previous presidents as well. And it's not okay. We have not had a comprehensive immigration policy. And that is the fault of our leaders, squarely. 46 years for Don Young. He had 46 years. I don't think it's going to take that long. I know that we have folks in America who have been here 19 years now, a temporary service and under a temporary program that have just now been now kicked out or starting to. And they have had children here. And they're getting kicked out. That's unconscionable. We should never be separating families at any cost. And let us remember that they are not criminals. We talk as though they are animals. Are you kidding me? These are people. I look for more humane leadership. And I can't wait to be that leader who will develop a comprehensive immigration policy right away. We need to work together in order to establish that. It's smart economics and it's humane.
Would you like a follow-up? And if you do, both of you for a follow-up, I'd also like you to specify a little bit about that southern border on how people are confusing the illegal immigration with political asylum and the due process part of it. So go ahead.
Yeah, it's not against the law to claim political asylum in this country. This is a part of our proud American tradition that folks that are fleeing persecution, who are fleeing violence against themselves and their families, who are trying to save their children, can come to this country and ask for political asylum. That is an American thing we all, as it lets in people in danger of dying. And what Trump administration has done is it subverted this process to where folks attempt to claim legal, claim political asylum legally without crossing the border and gathering in appropriate places but those gates are never open. The administration never sends officials to process those asylum seekers. So these mothers and children, instead of just dying there at the border of hunger and thirst, choose logically, like any person would, to save their children and cross into our country. And then we do barbaric things like rip them away out of the arms of a breastfeeding mothers and cage toddlers and teenagers in cages. That's un-American. That's unacceptable.
Thank you. Elise?
Not only have we been making the process difficult and committing what I would call atrocities when it comes to separating folks, we are now we have edicts from on top wherein we are allowing fewer to even start the process than ever before. So our lists now are many years long for anybody to even go through the process. And that's, even though we are all putting in money, I'm one of those who've been trying to help pay for attorneys to get these coming along, it doesn't help when our federal system isn't opening the gates to allow the process. we've got a real problem. He spoke to what the process is. Well, there are many families who are not choosing to come to America because they just want luxury. They are here to save their children's lives. And I believe we are not being good leaders to develop policy and stand up to our current administrator to ensure that we're humane as a country.
Thank you. Start with you, Elise. What is your position on collective bargaining and how important is it?
Alaska has the highest, might be the second highest number of union members in its state per capita. And that's because we have a really strong belief, and I'm there with them, that we need to be able to come together and ask for higher wages. I think that it's very important. My dad was a Teamster. He worked in the North Slope. He was able to get a very good wage and great benefits. And I got to tell you, when my dad passed away at that funeral, and it was about a crowd this size, I didn't know any of the people because I had been away from him for quite some time. At the end of it, two gentlemen walked up to me and they said, you know, your dad was a Teamster and we're here for you. Anything you need, we're here for you. And they were. They called me three times as a young mom and they were there for me. I am fully in for that commitment to labor, to unions. We need to ensure that we have safe work. We need to have livable wages, and we need to have the opportunity to bring people together to ask for that, because we are of the people. And that means we need to allow people to come together and ask for what they need.
Thank you, Dimitri.
Yeah, 2 minutes. I fully support collective bargaining. And again, because I myself used to be a union member, I worked in a union, and Several reasons I support unions, again, are because they provided me with a living wage that was able to put myself through college and pay for my wife's schooling. I was able to, unions kind of lift wages up across our entire country to hold wages up for even other people who are not in the union by establishing kind of a prevailing wage. And of course, unions hold up safety working standards. I remember working as a plant operator, and we were in charge of changing out filter vessels, and basically had to bend over in this huge filter and pull out little components, and we would get lightheaded and dizzy. And we had a recourse. We could go to a shop steward and say, hey, maybe we can have a respirator for this job, because we're like about to faint here sniffing these fumes from jet fuel. And so that is very important for very important function that the unions carry out. With this Janus decision that just came down, unions are under attack. And the basic premise is, folks, it undermines the notion of a union or the idea of a union, to where the unions negotiate the conditions, negotiate the contracts, and now people will be able to come in to the situation and simply get the benefit of a union without paying for it. And that undermines unions everywhere. And I'm appalled that we are at this stage where unions are under attack. It's not good for teachers. It's not good for electricians. It's not good for workers across our country.
Elise?
I just wanted to add a couple more things that unions are doing for us here in Alaska. For example, the Union of Educators, the NEA, who have endorsed me, they are bringing up the quality of teaching right now as we speak. They meet together and they talk about best practices for teachers. They collect. They're not just there for higher wages. They're there for bringing a professional level of teaching and learning communities that I believe are very critical. Secondly, I'm very, very proud of our system here of apprenticeships. We need to do more to help connect our students to these opportunities, because they're missing. We're going to be short electricians, plumbers, many of the jobs that are very good wages, because we are not helping to bring our students into those, but they're doing great work, and that's because of unions.
Do you have a follow-up, Dimitri?
No, I'm just told to keep my mic to my mouth every second. So I'm just trying not to screw that up.
Yeah. All right, we'll start with you this time, Dimitri. Yeah. The current political atmosphere in many parts of the country has become increasingly toxic to the recognition and expansion of civil rights for women, minorities, and the LGBTQ community. Are you prepared to combat expressions of intolerance, and how will you do that?
So what we see in our country today is the folks that are the loudest seem to win. It seems to be the reality. We have KKK demonstrating outside of the White House. We have hate groups coming back. We have bigotry on the rise. We have racism on the rise. And it's time for us folks who believe in these freedoms, the rights for women, the rights for LGBTQ communities, it's time for us to rise up and get loud, right? That's how we fight back. We can't just shrivel up here and sit in fear. We need to stand tall for our values. The only way we get back to where we want to be is by being loud and pushing back. We should not compromise on our values. Yeah, again, I'm not going to Washington, D.C. to work on with someone who wants to. I'm not never going to compromise on the right of women to control their bodies. I'm not going to Washington, D.C. to compromise about, oh, do we put 1,000 children into cages or 2,000? That's not a good compromise to me. We don't put the children into cages, period. That's not what America is about. So the only way we can beat this, if we actually stand tall for our values. We can't compromise. This is where our compromise got us. Compromise got us Donald Trump. Compromise got us Donald Young for 46 years. That's where middle of the road got us.
Go ahead.
Thank you. I agree with Dimitri. We absolutely have to stand tall to protect every single American. There is no excuse for inhumane policy, laws, and not only have I been there for years and years and years, standing tall for every child. I've been on immigration, gosh, back in the 80s. You could have seen me there standing tall, not only for what was happening with Noriega and the arms and the Middle America, but Central America had all kinds of problems, and we needed to be humane. We also had issues. I've been in pride parades, gosh, for 20 years. Yeah. Am I LGBTQ? No, but I am certainly their friend. And I brought my children on my back there because I've been a grassroots person standing tall. But you know what? That wasn't enough. It's time now to create legislation that has teeth in it. Women in Alaska? Let's talk about Alaska Native women. Alaska Native women are making 68 cents on the dollar. Is that all right? Those who are not of color, well, they're making more like 75, 76 cents. That's not okay either. What about the women who are afraid that their children, because the two of them are married, and they're not sure what's going on with this new Supreme Court judge, and they're worried that their children may be taken away from them? What about that? We must stand tall and create laws and ensure that they are followed through that protect us. And that's why I'm stepping up for Congress, because I need to do more than shout from the street corner. It's time.
Start with you, Elise.
Mm-hmm.
The Trump administration proposes to reduce dramatically the size of public lands, such as the Grand Staircase and the Bears Ears National Monuments, in favor of opening these lands to energy development. What is your position on public lands?
I believe that public lands in Alaska is what make us Alaska. I think that it's really critical that we preserve what we have. I know that there are laws around balance with that, and I appreciate that there is some opportunity for some, but in Alaska, we need to hold the line. We saw Tony Knowles dropping out of the board. In fact, I think it was half of those who were served on the Parks Commission. And the reason was they saw the writing on the wall that there was not going to be the support that was needed for somebody to stand tall to save and protect the important public lands that we have. And I think that it's really critical. We have Denali National Park here is the size of Maine, and millions of people come here because of that. For us to ever give in on that would be a huge mistake. And we need to stand tall to make the important resources that are, make sure that those resources are needed, that are needed, are there to protect those lands and, in fact, make those lands what brings more economy to us. I think that we've missed some opportunities. There are things like long trails that have been discussed that are really exciting, that if we use these lands in ways that are going to bring new economic opportunity vis-a-vis tourism, and even for us in Alaska to enjoy. It is the jewel for us here in Alaska. And I think it's critical that we have leaders who appreciate that. When I heard about, there's things that have been happening lately with wolves and all kinds of things where Don Young has not stood up at all. I want to know, where is he? Where is he tonight? Every community I go into, they say they can't remember when they saw him last. It's time for us to have a leader who's there, meeting with people and connecting and representing what we value.
Dimitri?
Yeah. Wilderness is one of the precious resources that Alaska has. We should value that. That's truly a resource that folks, when they travel to Alaska, that's what they want to see. If we lose wilderness, then we lost a major industry. And as far as energy development in the lower 48, to where these national parks and monuments continue to be developed for coal mining and et cetera, solution to this, a permanent solution, is to move our country towards renewable energy. It's a permanent solution, and we need to get moving towards renewable energy as fast as possible. And this is why I'm running to be in Congress, to be champion for renewable energy. Now, I have an electric car. I wanted to drive it here today. But you know what? Couldn't find a plug. Bear with me for a second. This costs $15. There are 500,000 electric vehicles being made. So how about in Congress, we create a grant that says each small city should install 5 of these that Teslas and other electric vehicles can plug into. And how about we subsidize that electricity? And how about we create a grant so we can have those 5 plugs powered by renewable energy, like wind? Why don't we do that? This is we don't need research. This is $15 in Home Depot. How hard is this? Let's do it.
I'm going to ask you during your rebuttal to come back to talk about the public lands and the administration, you know, in the last couple of days, wants to significantly decrease the size of these monuments in Utah. So talk to us about, you'll be first on your rebuttal, talk to us about how you can partner with people, because even though our primary focus is Alaska, we have to partner with everyone in Lower 48. And when you let that first monument size reduction happen, it's all over the country. So let's talk about that for just a minute.
Yeah, I don't know how many of you have been to the parks in Utah, but oh my gosh. Stunning. We love our Denali, but when you go on those roads, and the roads are made from the natural resources nearby, so they're red, and then you see the mountains, and these are, they're just as precious to them as we have our Chugach Range and our Denali, all of the pieces, and we even have in water park that is critical to us. I absolutely agree. Wyoming, there are so many states. In fact, I would argue all 50 states have this in common. We all treasure getting our kids outside, letting them play in the dirt, letting them see what's under a rock, letting them pick something from the tree and talking about what that is and where it came from. We all treasure that. We will always learn from that. That is exactly what we need to harvest. And so to do that, that's going to take bringing together legislators from all over. You'll see me getting in the Problem Solvers Caucus. This isn't a left, a right, or a middle issue. In fact, very few are. This is a people issue. This is a people issue, like many of ours. This is about what is the next generation going to need? They're going to need fresh air. They're going to need trees. They're going to need dirt. They're going to need water that's clean. And that means coming together, all of us, because there are ways we can find that commonality to help develop policy that makes sense for every single one of us, so that our next generation has that same joy, hope, and spirit and love of the outdoors.
Dimitri, we'll give you 2 minutes on that rebuttal.
Okay. So I can kind of see the problem with that kind of approach, because your colleague from Utah is going to say, huh, so you're campaigning on opening drilling in Anwar, but you don't want to open our monument here to energy development. Well, you know, we need jobs too. So that's where the reality comes in. That's the reality, right? Everybody wants to develop their energy. So what I'm saying is, renewable energy is the only way to stop this creep of us destroying wilderness for the sake of pumping oil, for the sake of fracking, for the sake of coal mining. We need a champion of renewable energy, and we need to be doing what we can. When electrical vehicles are coming, let's get electrical plugs all over in every city so folks can switch over from gasoline to electric. And let's power those electric vehicles with wind, with tidal energy. That's what we need to be doing. That is a true way of stopping development of monuments and et cetera.
So just to be clear, you do support public lands, though, to be left as is?
Yes.
Okay. Alisa, real quick follow-up, 30 seconds.
I'm just going to add that I appreciate my opponent's stance, and I would love to hear him say for sure where he is with the 1002 development. For me, I think that we need to move ourselves into renewables. Our family has two Prius. We're into the hybrids. We're moving ourselves. We appreciate that we absolutely must transition as soon as possible and maintain our lands and make sure that we're paying for our schools and our healthcare and our everything else that we need in Alaska. And so I look to be that person who champions us moving ahead in smart ways.
Did you want to answer that 1002 development position?
Sure. I will answer it as 1002 has been opened. I don't need to campaign on it.
Okay, let's move on. We'll start with you, Dimitri. Do you support term limits for Congress? Why or why not?
It is a difficult situation for Alaska, having we only have one seat in the House. So I would support some term limits. I think 2 decades, for example, is long enough.
Yeah. That's it. Should be short and sweet. Elise.
All in. One generation. My gosh. Come on. 46 years. Sorry. It's pretty hard to do the same thing for 46 years and stay really on task. I appreciate that. I appreciate the service that was given, but it's time to move on. And it's time to have somebody who knows that and is willing to bring up the next generation to have them ready to be serving next. That's what excites me, is making sure that we set the standard here for a government that is engaging, that gets the people seeing their way to that leadership position. Because that's what we need. We need to have people carry on with new ideas. We need to be listening to our youth right now, and then develop policy accordingly. At the same time, I appreciate that there's some institutional knowledge that we need to get our heads wrapped around. Certainly, as someone who's coming into politics for the first time, I'm going to be smart and have a very smart staff. I get that. As your congresswoman, I will be prepared, but I will also appreciate that it's time for the next generation to take over when it's time. I am all in for term limits.
Thank you. We'll start with you on this one, Elise.
Mm-hmm.
Do you favor the legalization of marijuana at the federal level? Why or why not?
So I'm a mom of four kids, and this is going to surprise all four of them. But I think that Alaskans have spoken, appropriately so, that we need to legalize marijuana because what we've done right now has done nothing, or criminalizing it has done nothing but put people in prison in ways that really is unconscionable. People are going in there as 20-year-olds for 10, 20 years. And then the prison owners, now we have private prisons throughout the nation, which we haven't covered yet. But this is really backwards to grow a strong America. A strong America legalizes marijuana, but also educates our children about it. A strong America makes it legal so that we can study it and really appreciate what the longitudinal effects are, and then helps to educate our people, particularly our youth. So I stand tall for reasonable solutions. I'm worried right now about our legalization in Alaska because we have people carrying around $30,000 in cash. It's very, very unsafe. And this creates this really horrible system where people are going around from Fred Meyer to Fred Meyer to buy their traveler's checks. They're called something else. Money orders. They get money orders for $2,900 so that it doesn't trigger the federal government, and then they can do their banking. It's really a backward system, and we need to create a safe way. And medicinally, I have to say, I have come after story. I've heard story after story, Seward in particular, where we've had people dying of cancer with only cannabis as being a way for them to feel relief because the other medicines are not working. And they've had to drag them up to the top of the hospital in order to let them have that relief with cannabis. So I support it.
Thank you. Dimitri?
I support legalizing marijuana at the federal level. I think it's counterproductive to keep fighting this fight. We legalized it in Alaska, and we have seen some minimum negative effects. But overall, it has been good for our economy. People use it for medicinal reasons. Veterans can get relief for their problems. So I have seen it to be a positive thing. So I think federal government should legalize it. And also for the point of that, marijuana convictions kind of disproportionately affect minorities. We have a lot of minorities mm-hmm. in prison now for marijuana offenses. And you can see there's bias in those convictions. So we should definitely legalize marijuana, if not just for that reason. On a separate subject, I had a good friend who was a CEO of a native corporation, and next thing I know, he's starting up a marijuana growing business, and my good friend Lloyd became Uncle Herb. So you guys have an Uncle Herb here in town, yeah. So
okay, you want to. Okay.
I'll just say I don't have any Uncle Herbs, but I will add that it's important that for the veterans in particular, there's some laws that need to be put in place to allow them the opportunity to partake, particularly those who are suffering. And it's gotten so bad right now that they're afraid of losing some of their benefits if they were to be in any trouble by using cannabis. And so I think there's some really, we're doing a disservice. And I also want to share that Don Young, who has been in office for 46 years, is on the cannabis caucus, and somehow nothing has changed. So there is, once again, room for improvement in leadership in Washington for Alaska.
We'll start with you, Dimitri. Do you feel that the Mueller investigation should proceed without restrictions? Why or why not?
I fully support the Mueller investigation going, running its course, being completely transparent. I think American people deserve to hear the truth. And the most disturbing thing about this president is that He's tearing apart the Department of Justice. He's tearing apart FBI, all these proud American institutions that separate us from places like Russia and China. These institutions that protect our rights, that guarantee our freedoms, that guarantee fair and impartial investigations and transparency into our government officials. So I would say, you know, the Department of Justice and our legal system and the FBI, it does not belong to Trump. It does not belong to Dong Young. These institutions belong to all Americans, and we need to safeguard them. And I fully support the investigation taking and running its course, and American people having the information of what really transpired.
Elise?
Absolutely agree. And I think this is we're all in on this. I mean, this reminds me of the Nixon days. I don't know if you guys remember, but remember how television was taken over by the Nixon investigation and how every single television was on and we were all watching like more than soap operas than anything else and any other news. This is all in for this. I'm there. I'm feeling anxious. I think that America deserves to have this full investigation. And I agree about how we are now starting to feel that our current administrator is peeling apart these really critical institutions that we all count on that make us feel whole. And I feel like there's a place for us to certainly stand tall, ask for that, and wait for that, and then respond once we hear. I've been waiting for President Trump's taxes for a lot of years now. So I look forward to seeing the full investigative report. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to go into the final question, and this will give you the opportunity for a rebuttal for the whole evening. And then we're going to take a very brief break, and we'll come back and take questions from the audience. So our final question tonight, and there will not be a rebuttal on this one as well. Elise, what gives you political hope in these challenging times?
Each and every day, I'm inspired to work harder. Why? Because I come into towns like Homer. I go and see Haven House. I walk out of Haven House, and the woman says to me, "Excuse me? I just want you to know that I really need you to win. And here's why. I have 3 teenage children. And they count on big brothers and sisters. And I know you get it. But I don't think that these girls, they were all 3 girls, would be alive right now were it not for big brothers, big sisters. I need you to win. Because I know that you will make sure that that important funding is there." She's a single mom. She works 2 jobs. She's counting on me. I'm in Kotzebue. And there's a woman there who says, "You know what? I'm going to be voting for you, and here's why. Because you came here. You listened to me. You visited our elder care home, which is this incredible model of how to bring in the food that they're used to. They are able to, they have won awards up the wazoo because they developed a way for caring for their seal oil, for their whale, for everything that they're used to eating to allow them in their senior years to have this. And they knew that I got that. And they said they need me to win because they need to make sure that those are in place. And I couldn't tell you how many parents are saying the same thing because of their children in public education or teachers who are saying the same thing. They need me to win. They're hanging on to this hope. I mentioned earlier the more than 600 volunteers, many of whom walk in and say, "Thank you for giving me something to do today." It's a pleasure. It's a gift that I've been given to be this conduit, to be able to serve you. And I get it that it's public service. So thank you.
Dimitri.
Hope is a double-edged sword. So I am inspired that we have a great response. Like I said, we've signed up hundreds of volunteers. You know, James is a volunteer on my campaign for this entire summer. My person who's providing office space to us donated office space. She has great experience. She's a successful businesswoman in Anchorage. And we work hard every single day, and people are inspired, and people do want to hear the message that we have a single payer Medicare for all, because they have heard everything else. To win against Dong Young, you have to do something different. You have to do something new. It's not good enough to have this laundry list of wishful ideas. You have to propose a solution. No one has ever run against Dong Young on a message of single payer Medicare for all. So why don't we do that? Why don't we do something different? We need to do something different. We can't keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result just based on hope. So ask yourself, what are we doing different this election cycle? Are you going to do something different? So hope. I also know that, folks, you can't just hope, because if you just hope and don't do anything, then you'll end up with a status quo. You'll end up with a place like Russia. That's why I'm running, because I see parallels emerging in our country that's starting to look dangerously like Russia. We got oligarchs controlling our government. Our taxes are going to the wealthiest at the top. We have cronies all over the place. We have coal industry running the EPA. Our healthcare system is collapsing. I drive around Anchorage. We have people laying on the ground, sleeping on every corner, shivering. I've only seen these images in the Soviet Union. So be careful with hope. It takes real work to change the trajectory of our country. Thanks.
Just want to take a second to mention when the CAN group and others got together to decide to put on this debate tonight, we all decided we're not going to spend time, money, and effort trying to raise funds to see if we can do this. We're just going to do this. And we've done it.
You have been listening to the Democratic Party primary candidates debate with two of the four candidates, Elise Galvin and Dimitri Shane, hosted by Borough Assembly member Kelly Cooper. This is listener-supported public radio, KBBI Homer AM 890. She looks straight ahead, not at him.